Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. You're tuned into Life is a Sacred Journey. Every week, we bring a new perspective to aging and caregiving. Here is your host, Michelle Pope.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to the virtual family of Life is a Sacred Journey. It is Friday morning at 8 a.m. in California, and we just want to thank you for coming back this Friday, joining us again. As I told you last week that we would have Jason Matthews on because we're going to have a really healthy conversation about finances, and we probably won't get it all done in the half hour, 45 minutes, but we will have him back. And then I am going to try to navigate the chat so that if there's any questions that you have that you think Jason might be able to answer during our conversation, please put them in the chat, okay? I got my phone here. I think I can navigate it from here, but I'll figure it out, okay? And I want to, first of all, thank all of you for supporting Life is a Sacred Journey. We are growing, growing, growing. Felicia is amazing and does an incredible job linking us to all these different things that I don't even understand what those different things are. But at the end of the day, we are reaching so many folks. I got an incredible letter yesterday from a listener out there who just said, you know, thank you. Thank you for keeping it real. Thank you for bringing all the different topics. And they thanked me for bringing my sincerity and honesty. And I have to say, I'm at that stage in my life that I don't know how to be anything but that. And it's not new. I've always been this way, actually. And as I get older, it gets worse. So I have to be authentic with you, and because then it wouldn't be right. Then Life is a Sacred Journey would be something else, and that's not what Life is a Sacred Journey is about. That's not what Nkati Akabwe, my first producer, thought. That's not what Felicia thinks. And so, you know, that's not what this is about. This is not the Michelle Pope Show. This is our thing together to share information, to bring people to you that might help you to live your best life and to live your sacred life, because life is sacred. It is your gift from the universe, regardless of whether you're a religious person or have faith beliefs. It is a gift because we only get to be here for a very short period of time. It seems like a long time, but it really is a short period of time. So good morning and welcome. Hit that share button and YouTube, all of that stuff. Just hit the share button, okay? Have your own party. Go to YouTube. Start going to Life is a Sacred Journey on YouTube because we're trying to get our listenership up there. Just start moving around, okay? Just move around and share it with everybody. All right. So it is my honor this morning. I'm so excited. I'm going to bring his bio up for me to take a look at it. I know Jason. I've had the honor of working side by side in partnership with Jason here at Alzheimer's Services of the East Bay. He is our board president, but he has been on our board for a number of years and has brought to ASEB financial sustainability in very hard times. And so I just really am so excited, one, to learn more about what he does and in his, you know, out in the world, and then to also bring him to you because of his background. But let me read his bio a little bit so that you know a little bit about Jason. So Jason is a California native and born and based in Oakland. He and I always banter back and forth about West Coast, East Coast, but not in a bad way because we'll get it twisted. But we're constantly having those kind of conversations as it relates to food and all that kind of stuff. But he began his career in insurance and financial services industry in 2004. With New York Life Insurance Company. See the connection even before. And during the midst of the Great Recession in 2009, he started Matthews Financial and Insurance Solutions. Matthews Financial Insurance and Solutions is a California firm operating nationally. So he operates nationally and has clients throughout the United States. And he specializes in facilitating world-class planning, action and results for people who receive financial windfalls. So, you know, if you win the lottery or monies that you get in, you know, if a family passes away and passes estate money down. But he also works in helping people in the community. We were just talking about putting together a webinar for young adults, you know, as they're getting these credit card applications, how to prepare your life. So because credit is a long-term journey, and in your 20s, you sometimes get caught up in stuff, and the next thing you know, you're 40, and that stuff is still haunting you. So I've asked him to work together with me and some other folks within the conference that I represent to bring that to our young people. He also serves as a Western Regional Vice President and National Board Member with the Urban Financial Services Coalition. And in this role, he operates as a leader for UFSC chapters and members of West of the Mississippi. He is definitely a person that is engaged and involved in public relations. He has his own. He's going to tell you all of that. He is on our board. He also is well known through the San Francisco Business Week. He's married. He has two beautiful children, an incredibly beautiful wife. He would have to in order to be the man that he is. But at the end of the day, Jason is a well-rounded Renaissance man, and what he is bringing to us today is his talent and expertise around financials and all of that. He recently just had a conversation with my sister in France because she was trying to figure out, I think, money. Well, I'm not going to tell her business. It's none of your business. She was trying to figure out some stuff. Because she'll kill me. But she was, you know, again, so it doesn't matter where you are, because I know I have viewers all over the world. It doesn't, that point I was making is that it doesn't matter where you are. And so welcome, Jason, to Life is a Sacred Journey. It is my honor to have you join me at the mic this morning. Good morning, good morning.
Good morning. I so love this conversation. I love being here Friday morning.
Well, I love your background. So Jason's outside. He's got the beautiful background for us. But let's get started, Jason. I always ask the question, why did you decide to go into this type of work, or why did you choose this as a career? Because work implies you're doing something that you don't like. But in 2009, in the middle of a recession, you decided to go this route. Why?
The main reason was I remember in 08, 09, the craziness of the Great Recession. I remember seeing people who were living as your neighbors, move out in the middle of the night, and just disappear from the neighborhood all over again. When they got a U-Haul, was an embarrassment in the middle of the night about what was happening during the mortgage crisis. Mm. I remember seeing major businesses who closed. And then, more importantly, I seen, like, my mother and some of her friends and uncles who were at these major corporations who were doing well, and the rug got pulled out from under them with layoffs or companies just moving as well. And I just wanted to be and help my family, my community, on how can we be better financially-wise when things like that happen so we could be more prepared. Mm-hmm. I think I always was interested in money. My mother was an accountant or an auditor growing up, so she was always on the books. I remember her doing the budget. And as I get older, and even at that point, I understand what money was for. I think oftentimes people are young, think that money is only supposed to be for going to the bar, buy cards, and materialistic items. But more importantly, well, my life calling is not worth my life calling is, let's really understand what money does. When we talk about the wealth gap, which I really want to close the wealth gap or understand what money does, you know, money prevents a guy like we heard in New York years ago, family didn't have money for bail, who got sat in prison for those years, eventually killed himself. And that was a financial thing. When we hear about George Floyd, how they say that he gave a fake $20 bill, that's because he had COVID. And he had COVID, he was hungry, but he didn't have money to buy a sandwich at that time, supposedly, right? Because he gave a fake 20, and all of us at one time might have had a credit card decline, and we give it instantly. Mm-hmm. But then he had a wealthy friend or a friend who made a lot of money who should have been making sure that he was taken care of. And that friend had a $250,000 wedding where the friend could put $100,000 and invest with him and they can start a security business. So I want to change that state of mind on what we can possibly do with money and what does money actually mean more than just cars and stuff. So that's always been my passion to really explain and help people understand that.
So I love that because, you know, I learned later in life, in my 20s, I was so excited about having graduated from college and, you know, working for one of the top fashion places back in Boston, Lord & Taylor's, and I was able to use my discount on payday. And again, I'm not putting any my parents down or anybody down, but you know, we didn't have social media, but we did have things that were the it's like the Christmas tree. It's light and camera action, and it pulls you because we are taught in this society that our value is how much material things we can gain, and we applaud people. I mean, let's be real, Jason. We applaud people the more they have, right? We lust after the people that have the big houses, the nice cars, the everything, and then the media knows that about us as humanity, and they shove that stuff down our throats, and then we start to think, well, I have no value if I put $100,000 in the bank versus paying for a car that's $100,000. So how do you shift that sort of mentality that kind of the society is not, that's not the promotion of the society. How do you shift that?
Right. I totally agree with you that. Our religion of America is not Christianity, is not Catholicism, not Islam. It is capitalism. And America was built on capitalism. And our biggest companies that we celebrate today are Google and Facebook. You know, 20% of the United States, when they first get on, they wake up, they go to Facebook. Facebook is an advertisement company. You don't think about it. You think of social media. But it's an advertisement company. It's one of the greatest advertising companies because they know your demographics. They know what your wants and needs. Their phone is – Google got your phone stalking you right now, hearing your conversation so they can advertise – certain things you might even just thought about, and they're going to put it in your face.
Mm-hmm.
And the hard part for us is to reverse that urge. I think the way that you reverse that urge is to really, I don't think we do it enough, really reverse engineer what we want and how life looks like. So I always give an example of my youngest son, who's autistic. And I always say we plan for the worst, pray for the best. So with him being autistic, I don't know if he's ever going to be self-sufficient. We're working our butt off, giving him all the services and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
But knowing that, I have to reverse engineer and say, if he's not going to be able to be self-sufficient, he's going to need certain resources, certain things financially-wise, and I need to figure out what that number is and back my way into it and do certain lifestyle changes just in case that happens. I think a lot of us are living too much day by day or on survival, just trying to survive without reverse engineering. How does 10 years look like? How does 20 years look like? I want my kids to go to college. What college do you want your kids to go to? Do you know what school that cost of that school is? Do you know the growth of the inflation of that school? And I think what we have to start doing is really reverse engineering everything that we're doing to figure out what's really important.
Yeah.
And we just go by day, waking up, checking our Facebook, and just always on that, we're always going to buy things. But once we really reverse engineer what do we really want and how it looks like, how it smells like, then that's when I think we make a lot better financial decisions.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing that I have always learned, I told folks last week, because I live a faith-based life, I got exposed to the Financial Peace University by Dave Ramsey, and I did that at the peak of my poor financial status, and it was relearning. That's exactly what it's just like being with food, relearning the purpose of money, relearning. It didn't mean that I stopped buying the things that I love. No, it didn't mean that, but it meant that, you know, I started looking at my life in three-quarter time. How much do I need to keep the roof over my head and the food and the things that I need to live, the daily life stuff? How much do I need to save, you know, for the rainy day fund, what we used to call the rainy day fund? And then how much, you know, for my philanthropic, meaning my church, the other things. And when I began to do that, it was funny. I started wanting to rob from the daily life and give to those two other things more. But it had to be a deliberate sort of like, whoa, I'm spending too much money to live. I don't need to spend that much money. I want to put more money here and I want to give more money here. But it was a psychological shift. And I had to put my credit cards in a Tupperware thingy with water and put them in the freezer. Okay, I did that so that I would not touch them and I would have to think about them because they would take forever to defrost. I mean, I had to do some things. So what are some tips that you have for changing that way that we think about how we are portioning out our money?
Hey, I think I'll give a two-prong. I'll give if I'm in a relationship approach, and I'll give you a single approach.
Okay.
In relationships, what I see is people in relationships are not having true money talk.
Okay.
And what I see with that is that I'm doing my own thing, she's doing her own thing, and we're going to keep paying these bills together, and we're just going to increase more bills, more expenditure. But think about it. If you had a one-bedroom apartment on your own and you were doing fine, and then she moves in, it doesn't mean that we instantly get a two-bedroom, we move up, or we start buying out more food, or whatever it is. It's how can we, let's work as a team, and we're not having that conversation. Let's figure out and have these conversations work as a team.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is people don't want to be vulnerable about their financial situation. Or people don't want to ask those true questions about what's your financial status, how's your views on money, and that as a relationship. And I see that constantly. So I think what we have to do is have true, vulnerable conversations on money, how we feel about money as a co-form relationship about how if certain things happen or how we want to see our lives. For single people, I think is you just have to really think about, you have to figure out how to be disciplined. One thing is maybe you, like I did with my Facebook at times where I delete Facebook off my phone. I was like, all right, I want to delete my Facebook. But more importantly, what I tell people is also, if you have a savings, a debt plan, it's to put everything on auto. Make it where you don't have to think about it. When you get paid, Social Security already knows they're getting their money. Federal government doesn't trust you with your own money, so they can give us the taxes when you get paid. Do the same thing for you. They don't trust you. They know you won't spend that money. So you have to do the same thing, which is this. Set up what I tell people is for the savings portion is set up an account where you don't have easy access to you, where you go to the bank, have an ATM card, and you can pull out that cash or as easy access on your phone. But make it set up where you automatically put those savings or that debt plan and have it do automatically. Sit down one day and say, I'm going to have it on. If I get paid on the first it's going to be, and if I get paid on the 15th, on the 15th. And do it where things are on auto where you don't think about it. The more you think towards it, the harder it's going to be because you're like, that new PlayStation 5 is coming out. That new TV on Best Buy is coming out. But if we can put things on auto and we can't look at it, it's great.
Okay.
So I tell my clients, hey, let's open up an account over here, have an automatic. We ain't got no card on it. You ain't going to have no app on it. And so if you see something on sale, you better have some money right here. If not, you just.
Yeah.
If it's really that important, you'll drive. Sometimes I have my clients set up a credit union account 100 miles away. And if it's that serious, you'll drive way out to that credit union to get that money. But that's a whole lot of work. You must really want it. So I think you have to do those things where you put things on auto where you don't have to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But then have those true conversations where you're being vulnerable. And I think oftentimes we don't be vulnerable about money because we don't want to hear that reaction from that person. We don't want to hear that no from it. It's a deeper thing than just money.
Yeah.
It's a psychological thing. Like, one thing I know, I work with a lot of women who are professionals doing well. And what you notice is they usually have more assets, especially in the black community. Black women usually have more money and assets than black men. That's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't ever want to have that conversation because I bring up prenups. But nobody ever want to have a conversation about prenups. Well, you have a house. We love them. If you love them, you should sign it. But we don't want to have that conversation because we don't want them to say no and blow up and then the relationship broke. But we have to be vulnerable and have those conversations.
Yeah. And also have those conversations before things one, if it's a partnership, whether it's a marriage or a partnership of cohabitation or whatever it is, even if you're just two people renting a space, making sure that you have understanding about each other's financial sustainability is so important if you don't want to end up being the person paying the rent. You know, I mean, these are things that we also need to be passing down and teaching our young people and not waiting, teach them along the way so that they have a better understanding about finances. So I want to ask you a couple of questions about retirement funds, and some questions came through. If you are a person that is not collecting your Social Security yet, when is the best time to get the best bang for your buck? If you're still healthy, you don't have any reason to retire, but you're at that age where you can. What's that sweet spot to say, okay, I'm gonna retire and stop pulling down some of those Social Security funds?
Okay, there's a couple things I'm thinking. If you're healthy, the first question is your health.
Yeah.
If you're healthy, that means you, with today's science, you're going to live a long time if you have a good health. That's the one you have to consider. Also, the second thing you need to consider is, do you still want to work or not? Because if you still want to work and pull Social Security at younger ages, there is a penalty for pulling it out early. And what I mean by early is the earliest you can take it is at 62. And then when they say your full retirement age, depends on what year you're born, it's between 65 and 66, depends on the month. The Social Security changes, but then your full retirement age is 70. So what happens is, if you take it at 62 and you're still working full time, you're gonna have to pay a portion of that back in taxes at the end of the year, like 50% depends on your income. So
okay.
if you retire early and you're healthy and you have to retire early or you need that income, take it at 62. Or if you don't have the best health, let's say you got a heart attack at 50, 55, you're not in the best shape, take it early. But if you're young, you know you don't work till 70, you're going to still be working, especially full-time, or you don't need that income, wait till you're 70 years old. Here's the reason why. Every year that you don't take it from 62 to all the way up to age 70, you get an 8% increase on your Social Security payment.
Oh.
Every single year. So every year you get 8% growth. Now, none of your investments, you're going to have to guarantee 8% growth for you. Only Social Security can in the federal government. So every year you will get 8% until you decide to until the age of 70. But if you hate your job, you hate what you're doing, you're just ready to retire, then I will look at it different. But if you're planning on working, you're still passionate about it, you still love that job, wait till you're 70. But up until then, if not, then you should take it early at that point.
So some people, I hear people saying sometimes, and maybe you can explain this to me, they'll say, I can only work a certain amount of hours because, like, they'll have a part-time job, and they say, I can only work a certain amount of hours because it'll affect my Social Security. What are they telling us or telling me when they say that?
Yeah, so what happens is between the age of 62 and 66, or your full retirement age, depends on where that is, and you can find that out by going to SSA.gov, and you can look at your Social Security benefits on there. They no longer send out letters unless you're actually senior, but SSA.gov. And what it says is you have an income threshold that you can make outside of Social Security where if you go over that limit, your Social Security benefits will now be taxable, a certain portion of it.
Okay.
So let's say you're making 30 grand outside of Social Security. They're saying after that 30 grand, your Social Security income, a portion of it, is going to be considered taxable. So what people want to do is they don't want their Social Security to be taxable. So they say, I don't want to make sure I go over that threshold.
Okay.
But once you reach full retirement age, that penalty no longer happens unless you make, I want to say that, if you make a certain income, then you still have to pay taxes on your Social Security. So that's what they're saying.
Oh, okay.
So
I see.
If you're an individual, I think you make over 30 grand above Social Security, you're going to have to pay a certain portion of that is going to be considered taxable for Social Security.
Okay.
So that's what people are referring to. They don't want their Social Security to be taxed.
Got it.
Yeah, Social Security is a double taxation where you pay taxes while you're working.
Right.
And then once you retire, you have to pay taxes if you hit over a threshold.
So, all right, so let me ask this question. this threat of always hearing about there not being enough Social Security to, you know, for the baby boomers before a lot of baby, well, I won't even go there. That's another show. the baby boomers. Now with COVID, are Social Security benefits for those individuals that are about to or receiving, I mean, is that in jeopardy?
So this is what happens with Social Security. So Social Security is supposed to run out by 2034.
Okay.
Due to COVID and the pandemic and unemployment, Social Security is going to run out faster. And the reason being is you have less people working, which means less people are contributing towards it now due to people being unemployed. Now, I always say there's the biggest voting block in America is people 50 and above. Over 100 million voters are in that block. Right? And most of those people, number one retirement vehicle they're going to use or dependent on are Social Security. I think it's political suicide for them to get rid of Social Security. But this is what's going to happen right now. So when Social Security runs out, is when they run out of money, which is the money reserves, what they're going to do, what they can do, what I think is going to be is different. But what they can do is say, hey, we're going to pay Social Security based off the money we receive from all payments from people working every month. That should be 74% of the benefits. So if you're supposed to receive, say, $1,000 a month, it will go down to $750 a month at that point.
Okay.
But what I think was going to happen is the government just printed $5 trillion. And I think what they might do is just continue to print money. But what they do is they're doing certain things to slow it down. For instance, there used to be a strategy you could use before the last that you could do, which was called file and suspend, which means if I'm a husband and I'm a wife, and my husband's still working, I'm retired as a wife, I can jump on his Social Security benefits and get a check from that. But then when I decide to take my Social Security, allow my Social Security to grow, then I can take it. They got rid of that.
Oh.
I think they're going to get rid of other benefits as well.
Okay.
I say that, for instance, if you've been married and divorced for over 10 years, you can piggyback on your ex. Piggyback on your ex's Social Security and receive their benefits if it's higher than yours. I think that'll be eliminated. They're going to eliminate inflation growth on it.
Okay.
So we see it right now where the government says there's not that much inflation, yada yada yada. But all of us seen it. We've seen our health care, food, a mortgage, a rent, everything has been going up. But Social Security has not been keeping it. I think that's designed for it, saying that we really don't have inflation, and they're going to get rid of any other extra benefits within Social Security. But you will receive it. I think the government is just going to print money, but you will receive it.
Well, because I think there would be mayhem, and people would be upset because you've been taking it. Right? You know, I mean.
You'd be highly upset.
Yeah, I know I would be.
In the street. You have 16% of retirees sole benefits in Social Security. What are you going to do? You're going to allow those people to go homeless in the street?
That would make chaos.
So I think they would just print the money, which would cause inflation to happen. But I think people 50 and above will receive their benefits.
Mm-hmm.
If you're below 50, I would tell you not to guarantee because it's going to look different. We don't know how it's going to look different, but for you, it's going to look different. It might be another tier system. It's like you see pension plans, they have tier systems.
Okay.
And it might be the same way that's going to happen.
So what would you – and what about people who own property in this time? You know, I'm noticing that the for sale signs are going up again. I didn't realize that there was enough money being circulated in the economy for people to purchase homes. But when you own property, I mean, the American dream is you own property, you own your home, and that is your nest egg for the future. We've seen over the last decade property things go up and down. We had the property bubble where we bailed out the banks that gave away bad loans. I was a victim of one of those bad loans through Countrywide.
Criminal.
Yeah.
Not bad. Those are criminal. And let me say this. Let me say this for the record.
Okay.
I am still pissed off that none of those people went to jail. Nobody from Bank of America, nobody from Citibank, nobody from Countrywide, Wells Fargo, and so on. Those were fraudulent. A lot of people were predatory. There were prejudice, racist loans. And they know what they're doing because there were emails about how they were having conversations about it. And it's sad to say that somebody can steal $20 in America, go to prison, but those people steal billions of dollars and get away with it. I didn't mind put that little.
Well, no, no, I agree. If you were on the if you heard one of past show, that's what I said about right now. Sending checks out to help people get over this time. I'm not saying give people their whole income, but, you know, giving them a little bit. You bailed out the banks, but you can't bail out the American people without having all this controversy about why you have to do it. You have to do it because there's more tents going up and down Shattuck Avenue. That's why you have to do it. You have to do it because there are families at People Park. There's families with children living in People's Park here in Berkeley. That's why you have to do it. It's not because I want to pay my taxes, but you got to help the people. And the reality is, if I become victimized by poverty and I've paid into the system, I should not have to sleep on the concrete. That's just
totally true.
I'm sorry, and that's how I feel. You know,
the problem is right now we have. And here's the crazy moment of the time before we talk about housing. If you look at history, and this is a huge mistake when we look at history. We always talk about how Hoover, the President Hoover, caused the Great Depression. Well, that's only a small portion of the true history. The true history of it was Hoover had an election just like we had with Trump, where he was almost a lame duck president. You had the Congress, which was a Democratic Congress, knew that FDR was going to be president. They didn't want to help out Trump, not Trump, but Hoover become president. So they made sure there was no stimulus package getting raised. They didn't want to pass the stimulus package. So upon that, that winter made that recession into a Great Depression before FDR came in. And it made a spiral effect. So when they got FDR in, where they knew they could pass whatever they want, it was not enough money at that point. And it's the same thing now where we have a lame duck president, maybe, where they couldn't pass the $2 trillion, but they use these, and this is both sides is guilty of this right now, where both sides should pass a bill right now, it was paying people. We could have this horrible winter where we have a lame duck presidency, nothing gets done, and people won't receive money in February, March. What are we going to do for these Americans now who are going to be behind we're about to be behind and have one of the worst winters without no stimulus, no more unemployment benefits, no more PPP. What are you going to do to these restaurants that talk to people in Chicago? It's 20 degrees yesterday, 40 degrees in Dallas. It's too cold for me to eat outside, right? I'm in California, but those too cold for my, for me.
Yeah.
But we have to think about that. This might be one of the, this is a horrible thing. And I think all Americans should be right here to your congressperson, to your senator, to your president, telling about we need a stimulus package to get done, because if not, we could see something like it happen in the 1930s before FDR came in. And FDR didn't fix the Great Depression. What FDR did, he had great programs to help people, but we couldn't get out of the Great Depression until World War II, and we have to remember that.
And, you know, Jason, I love it because you're like me. We love history. You know, we don't just I don't just come up here and talk to people. I read and read and read and read and read. And history is so amazing. You know, like I didn't even know there wasn't a such thing as credit, you know, in its true form, like before the 60s. Like if people did layaway and did all kinds of things like that, they bartered. You know, do you think that we will ever have a true barter system again that would, I mean, are we getting to a place that bartering is even a part of our psyche?
I thought it wasn't 08. I thought we started bartering. But you know what? When times get good and these Visa and MasterCard start advertising again, people forget all about bartering all over again. And I think I think there is a place for bartering. And I think there's a small group of us who are bartering, but we need to start bartering. I think we should start getting back, and I think it's happening slowly. We're going back to the 1800s where we had the goldsmith. He had his own business. He had the cobbler. And he bartered and traded. And I think we're slowly getting to that point where people are slowly trading off skill for what they need. I think it's slowly happening. I just think we need to do more of it in a faster way. And I think this might cause it with the people not getting the unemployment, people forced to get laid off, these businesses, where you're going to see more and more borrowing. It might be a permanent thing, which is not a bad idea.
And then how does all of the stuff that's happening right now affect credit? Like, there, you know, every time I pay a bill now, there's a recording, or I've been getting stuff in the mail, you know, are you a person being affected financially by COVID, da-da-da-da. What is the, you know, I said no right now through the grace of God, no. But what happens if you say yes? I mean.
So right now, what some of them are doing is they're giving relief programs, supposedly, where they say we're not giving no interest, or you don't have to pay. And here's the one big one, especially for housing. You don't have to pay for a certain period of time. And then afterwards, depends on how you negotiate it, you go, oh, it's a whole lump sum? A lot of people have to pay a lump sum for all the back months they haven't paid. So you better hope that you have the money. The question is, how are you going to get the money if you take that plan?
Yeah.
So, but if you negotiate, some people are getting a monthly payment. Mm-hmm. But I think you're about to see next year the most foreclosures you will ever see in your life. The most. Historically wise, because so many people behind on it, people want to have bad credit. Some people are getting bailed out, but these banks are saying, hey, you missed March of last year through January because you can't foreclose on people
right
until February next year.
Okay.
I want all 9 month payment. I want all 9 months. And you're going to be like, where is that coming from? And then you're going to see more and more people get foreclosed on because of that or short sale on. It's about to be very scary. So that's why I think we have to go back to working as a family unit. Not as an individual unit. We got sold this bag of dreams that the American that you're supposed to grow up, live individualized, move out of your family, live individualized, and I do me, my sister do her, my brother do his thing, and everybody do one thing. This country is going back to family principles. You see so many people right now, I think they say half millennials are living at home. There is nothing wrong with that. We're going back to multi-generational housing. People live together, and we have to work as a unit. Because if one person loses a job, another person should have my back.
Yeah.
And if we go by this American dream that every individual do their own thing, we're going to be messed up as individuals. We have to learn how to work as a collective family unit, which I think is so important.
I love that because those people who know me, I have a vision board. I've had this vision board now for almost 20 years. And the vision board, I have no idea where this plot of land is. I don't, but it's on my vision board, and on it are multiple houses that I have drawn, and I have the names of not just my blood family, but my family who have gotten me to this place in my life. I have their names on over the roofs of those houses, because to me, as a collective, if we came together and formed our own little village, and did our work, did what we do, provide whatever for the children. And I'm not talking about some crazy commune cult thing. I ain't talking about that. I'm just talking about creating community where the children can grow up safe, the elders can age properly. Obviously, the communities that we're building by ourselves is not working because our children don't feel safe, our elders don't feel safe. So at the end of the day, something else might be better. When we think about community that way now, though, Jason, I am thinking about these high-rise apartments that are going up in communities like Walnut Creek next to the BART, small spaces, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a month. They create this subliminal idea of community, but it's still very much focus towards individuals that can pay that level of money, and majority of those individuals are millennials. So, but I hear that I hear some of them, even though they're making that kind of money, they're also running out of money too. Can you talk a little bit about that? What's happening?
So I remember July stack, had 16,000 people working for startups got laid off in July. And that's in the Bay Area, not around the country. That was just the Bay Area startups. So the startup field, a lot of money was running dry for the startups for a period of time. Started last year, ever since the WeWork fiasco. If you don't know about the WeWork fiasco, WeWork put out this great stock, publicly owned stock, put the boom out the sky, did great, but they found out their finances weren't running right. They weren't hitting the numbers that they said, and then they just took a huge tanking. And so a lot of venture capitalists and people that raised money was like, hold up, we want really got you started now. Like, how are we going to make our money when you're not making the numbers that you say you're doing? So you have these millennials who are doing that, but then the trend has changed because of COVID. So the reason being is people want to live in San Francisco, Walnut Creek, be close to work.
Yeah.
Well, you have companies like Visa, Google, and all these places that say, hey, you don't have to come back to work for a while. And a lot of these people, they might have that high-rise apartment in San Francisco, Walnut Creek, or Oakland, but they have multiple roommates. So you got one dining room table with five techies at one table. It's not working no more. So what you're seeing is they're actually moving back home or to the suburb because they don't need to be in San Francisco because they're not coming back for a while. And so that's why you have ghosts. Like, San Francisco is a ghost town. Nobody in these high-rises. You go there, you see tumbleweed. And you hear old country music down the street, and you're parking in front of a building. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But that trend of the high rises, I think, is right now is died down due to COVID. I think it's like a chain to die down with COVID. The question is, what's going to happen after COVID if people are going to move back into the cities, back into high rises? Like Lake Tahoe is booming right now. Real estate booming right now in Lake Tahoe. And Manteca in these far places where people get land and space, they want their kids to have space, they want to work. Those places are booming right now in the real estate market. But San Francisco, rents are drastically dropping in San Francisco. It's crazy.
So when you just talked about the stock market, and of course we know in the last 48 hours it took a major boom, 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 boom. How is it still a viable way to accumulate, and I'm not going to even say wealth, just finances, accumulate dollars? Is the stock market still a good place to go? And if you are someone that is low income, you know, still working, how do you even engage in the stock market? I've been hearing about this new program called, is it Slack or I can't remember, but you can invest little money, and I guess it's penny stock that they're helping people to invest in. But I mean, is that still a place that people should go?
I think what it is I think you need to be diversified. I think the problem is if you're only buying stocks and that's it, then you're doing the wrong thing. And what you should be doing, rule of thumb is you're doing a company match for 401k plan, 403B, 457. First of all, do your company match with that. I think oftentimes people jump the gun. First of all, let's do the match. Number two, let's have some cash. Let's have some savings. I think people are always trying to do the sexy things. And my son plays baseball. I love baseball, coach baseball. And we said, you can't play catch, you can't play baseball. You can't talk about bunting, we can't talk about stealing, tweezing, and all this other stuff. So what we have to do is get our fundamentals right, which is this. I need to make sure I have 36 months worth of reserve. 3 to 6 months worth of savings. If you don't have that, why are we talking about the sexy stuff? Yeah, if your company matches, let's take that free money and invest that. But we shouldn't be talking about that sexy stuff. If something happens and the stock market falls, you laid off, you have nothing to cover your rent. So let's build up that reserve. Then we can look at, do we do stocks? Do we do mutual funds? And then that's when you talk to an advisor to design a portfolio for you. As you get older, what you want to say, and when I say older, 50 plus, you need to figure out how much income do I need for my basic expenses? And figure out what things do I have guaranteed for that? Is that a pension? Do I have a Social Security? And if so, what is the gap? And what of my assets can I fill that gap with? Can I fill that gap with some of the 401k plan I have and design it where it can give me some guaranteed income to fill that basic expense gap when I decide to retire? Is it looking at doing a reverse mortgage where some people consider with the I'm not saying they should, but am I using some of my life insurance to pay cover that gap, or am I using some of my annuities? So you have to look at the overall picture. Stocks not the end all be all. It's really about having true diversification. We have some stocks. You have some bonds, you look at some annuities, cash value life insurance, look at the Roth IRA. Just don't think, hey, should I buy stocks? And understand what the stock market did. In 2000, the stock market, the S&P 500, I should say, the biggest index for the stock market that we know in America, dropped by 49%. You look at 08, 09 stock market, you know that dropped 56%. We have to say, if the market drops 50%, am I going to be okay? And if you're not, how much of that money can you actually risk right now? We're in a recession. You see these numbers going up is not reality.
Okay.
Right?
Right
now it's not reality what the stock market is.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to realize that huge boom and based on historical standards, is going to drop. Now, how much of that money did y'all want to risk dropping like it did in 2008, where it dropped 50%? That's the question you want to ask yourself. If you're not comfortable with that drop, maybe you should look at being a lot more conservative. Mm-hmm. But remember, it dropped 50% the last two recessions. And if you listen to the IMF, the Federal Reserve, the people who print money, this is supposed to be way worse than we had in 08. 08 is a walk in the park compared to this.
Oh, really? So when you say that it's that 08 was a walk in the park compared to this, what's the difference? Is it because we have no end? I mean, what does that mean? Tell us what that means.
So right now what we have about what? In 08, we had about what? Right now we have about 35, 38 million people unemployed. Okay. We have more people unemployed than we ever have in America, which is a huge thing. Also, the debt on corporate and individual debt has risen drastically as well. And with COVID lockdowns, we don't know when things are going to open up.
Right.
We have a vaccine. So now you have all these people who's not working with tons of debt and lack of savings. And these companies are struggling to make sales. You got a few companies doing well, Home Depot, Amazon,
Target.
But none of these, reality is actually this. America has not bounced back since 2000 without debt. Ever mm-hmm. since the dot-com bubble, everything's been driven by debt. American fundamentals is messed up.
Yeah.
So if you look at 2000, yeah. and the housing bubble all was future debt. Income tax not rose in America. This is what we're not talking about during this election, which irks. We're not talking about how can we rise. We're talking about increasing minimum wage, but how can we increase breadwinner jobs? Income has been stagnant in America way too long. And when I talk about breadwinner jobs, I'm talking about how can we get more jobs that put food on the table, put a roof over somebody's head, and we still have enough money to save. The problem in America is income's been stagnant for so long, and nobody's talking about strategies to raise increase that pay in America, not minimum wage, right? But how can we increase breadwinner jobs? When we do that, everybody wins in America. And what's happening is people are not winning in America, and you have way more people unemployed than we had in the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
But you had the stimulus, and the stimulus is all out no more. So what do we do then? And this stock market is a reflection of it, because only a very few of them are doing well. Amazon doing well. But we don't know how that's going to be, because stimulus package ran out, unemployment benefits ran
yeah.
out. So we don't
yeah.
know if people want to keep it going. So.
And, you know, the other side of it is, what if you are the person, you know, and I hear this all the time, and again, as you know, we work with individuals that are low income and many living below the poverty line. And so, you know, they hear, you know, save, put this money away, blah, 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 and they're like, are you kidding me? I can't do that. So is there hope for those individuals outside of, you know, the public policy programs and all of that? I mean, how do we equalize this playing field a little bit so that people can, you know, I don't like that old adage, pick themselves up by their bootstraps, because if your shoes have no straps in them, there's nothing to pick up. If you have no shoes on your feet or soles on your shoes, I mean, all these things.
It's a lie of America. That's a lie of America, the bootstrap thing. If you look at American policies ever since the beginning, we have pushed certain groups to win compared to others. We have never been a true freestyle, free market, capitalistic society. We had the Homestead Act, which told people, come here, get a free piece of land. We had the VA programs. We had all these programs throughout America to get America up to a certain point. So this bootstrapping thing, even Martin Luther King said, is BS. You've been giving people programs from the very beginning.
Okay.
So but what can we do outside of a public policy approach?
Mm-hmm.
I would say it's very challenging.
Okay.
And sometimes they might say it's unrealistic, but maybe it is multi-generational housing where all four of us who are not living well live together and lower cost of living. Maybe it is, I hate to say, working a second or third job. Maybe it's learning how to self-educate ourselves more and more with using YouTube, another thing, you're trying to build up more skills so we can figure out how to increase our income. I should say it's a very challenging time for a lot
yeah,
of us.
And
I think without public policy, it's going to be tough. But I think you got to be more creative. You're going to have to work as a group. Like, this is my group. We're going to work this out. We got a two-bedroom. We're going to live in this. We're all going to chip in. And a little bit we do have, and then we're going to figure out how we can build up this type of skill or build, do a business plan and start a business together. Or maybe I got a certain talent that I need to use. And maybe and that's what I think we have to do is figure out what other talent we have where we can, you know, make some money to move up the ladder from just saying, hey, we're going to be in poverty. But I think we all have certain type of skills that we can use to try and possibly boost ourselves up. It's just very challenging, but you've got to do it. If not, you're going to be messed up.
Yeah.
Because right now, public policy is not to help you move up. It's to help you just be okay where you're at, which is, the, at the end of the day, what American policies are right now.
And it's like, thank you for saying that. I tell people all the time, the public policy world, as great as it may seem, it too is a trap because it just puts you in hover. It Hoverville, you're not, and folks are not, people aren't flourishing and sustaining life in those positions. So it is very, very difficult. So
true.
Would
I
you,
saw that myself.
Yeah, there is not.
Sunnydale Project. I went to the teardown of Sunnydale Project in San Francisco, which was the biggest public housing in San Francisco. You have people there for 4 or 5 generations in San Francisco living in these. Living in these projects that were getting teared down. What do they do now? I think we're building a permanent caste system. And one thing we can do as far as public policy is, how can we put together a plan for those people to say, hey, this is your poverty level. We're going to make sure it's designed, and our goal is that you have to move up the ladder. What we're going to do is we're going to give you the resources to move up in the world. We're not just going to let you just to be here living right here in this poverty level. We're going to give you the resources. We're going to give you the skills so you can get out of here in 5 years. We don't see you no more. We don't want to see your grandma. We don't want to see your kids living here. We want to move you up. But we're not having policies like that where we move people up.
Well, I made a comment the other day that poverty is just another way to make money. Somebody said to me, wow, Michelle. I said, well, let me just explain to you. Do you know how many federal billions, trillions of dollars come from the federal government programming to stop all levels of poverty in every inner city, but yet the poverty continues to grow?
Because those people still need to make money. And then it's expensive to be poverty. You go to the liquor store, the food's more expensive. You don't have a bank account or anything. You go to check cashing. They charge you to cash a government check. A government check is guaranteed. And they charge you crazy amount of money. And the people are making so much money. It's poverty pimping.
Yeah.
People are making so much money off of poverty. People want that second to go because that's how they pay their bills and make sure they're not in poverty.
Yeah.
And that's the unfortunate part about it.
Well, you know, Jason and I have been to Sacramento many, many times when Medi-Cal is and probably will be again under fire to be dismantled and to provide services for individuals who need it and not all necessarily low income, just needing the support and help because of where they are in their health status. And I say to them all the time, every senator, every person, why do you always go after the low-hanging fruit? Why are you not going after the system and changing the system? Something is systemically wrong with a system that every single year you say, let's get rid of it because you think that, and it's not that much money. I mean, it's like millions. It's not even billions. It's millions. And you begin to think, why would you be, what is it, what was the old saying, a penny, pound, foolish, penny, whatever? Why would you want to grab from here thinking, okay, take this away, we need this money now, and then what happens after? 40, 60, 90 days, whatever, later, you've got those same people living in poverty, and now you have to take care of them for free.
Right. Oxymoron. Stupid.
Yeah, so
not thinking about the bigger picture. Everybody's looking here instead of looking at the whole forest. They're all here instead of let's look at the whole bigger scheme of things.
Wow. So Jason, we have come to we have been talking for an hour. Okay. Teresa, you've got your hour. Finally. I just want to say this is a topic that is near and dear to my heart. Many of you know Teresa wants to know your opinion on the new book, Greenwood. Do you know about that?
I know the history of Greenwood, but I have not read the book Greenwood yet.
What is share the history of Greenwood with all of us so that we're all aware.
Right. So Greenwood, the history of Greenwood is the history of one of the first black banks, and now Taylor Mike has actually reopened that, started a new bank called Greenwood, but it's one of the first financial institutions in America. Black finance institutions in America that now they're reopening.
Oh, wow. And where is it? Where is it?
It's going to be all digital.
It's
all digital banking. So I think his name is Michael Rapper, a.k.a. Killer Mike, who's a rapper, but he just started it, say, a month ago.
Okay.
With it. Yeah.
Greenwood Bank. Now, the question will be for some, you know, online banking, is it safe? I can't go in anywhere. Will they take my money and run? Is it a, you know, all, you know. So what is your response to the digital banking?
Online banking, remember, if it's insured by the FDIC, it should be okay.
Okay.
If it's not insured by the FDIC, then it's not a bank, and you should see what type of insurance programs they do have. So there's different type of insurance programs. So credit unions don't do the FDIC, they do the SPIC, which is their own insurance, even though you might do online banking with them. Insurance companies have their own insurance companies as well to back it. But as long as they are insured somehow, you should be okay.
Okay.
If people didn't have their money from those places, we might see chaos in America by not having money insured. We will have a bank run, which everybody's scared of what happened to Great Depression. But as long as your money is insured, you should be okay. But remember, if you are a Cash App, you're on PayPal, you're doing those money transfers, those are not insured. It's just going by the good faith of PayPal or Cash App or any of those fintech companies.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So that's why people use Zelle, because Zelle is actually backed by a bank. But everything else is not insured. You're going by the good faith of PayPal and Cash App that you're going to get your money.
So it's called Zelle, Z-A-L-E?
Zelle.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So, yeah. So, besides that, all your money is PayPal, all the fintech companies, are you doing money transfer to your friends? That money's not insured.
Okay.
Just your heads up.
So,
if you see that money the next day, you might be messed up.
So, Teresa's question is, Greenwood Bank insured? And you said yes. Okay.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. Okay. All right.
And other ones you might look at is One United Bank. As well, which is the biggest black online bank in America, One United Bank. I also have Capital One Bank, which is also another one I use for online banking as well.
So Capital One got some bad press, in the last decade for some bad practices. So I just want to clear the air. So the Capital One Cafe is a whole new configuration of Capital One. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So,
and they had good management on that. And that's one thing you have to look at. Just don't put your money where your money is, a great point. Research the companies you're putting money in, not just your bank, but research about your grocery store. Who are you buying your products from? And see if they have the same values as you. Because they might not. So it's good to look into them. For instance, Wells Fargo don't have the same values as me right now.
Yeah, me either.
So we have to make sure. I threw that jab out, but we have to just find companies that have the same values as us.
All right. Well, we have come to the end of Life is a Sacred Journey. The sun has come up and it's shining on both Jason and I. This has been so enlightening for me personally, and I know that it has been for all of you. We will have Jason back because I think during this time we need to work together to figure out a way that we can come make it to 2024 right now is what I'm hearing. And so let's do it together. Jason, please come back and help our Life is a Sacred Journey audience get through this time. We need to learn more. And then the next time we'll talk a little bit more about insurance, life insurance, and all those policies that we have in shoeboxes somewhere in our houses and how we can turn them into a benefit for us. We are, stay with me, Jason. So we're at the end of Life is a Sacred Journey. This is going to be a rough weekend for a lot of people. They're preparing, if they haven't already taken their ballot to a box, or for someone like me, I'm actually still going to physically go in because I need to, for some reason I need to. And the reality is I'm feeling some kind of way about this new diversity federal thing that came down. So I'm feeling weird about that. And I'm feeling weird about the 47 ballots in the state of California that they cannot find. And I'm feeling all kinds of things. And I know you are, too. We all are. So just take some time to find a place to sit quiet, to meditate, to be one with yourself, because it's going to be a bumpy road between now and the beginning of 2021. Our emotions are going to go up and down. We're going to feel a whole lot of things. But let's be in solidarity together. Let's lean on each other. Let's get through this time. The other thing I want to tell you is I wore my John Lewis shirt for you guys today, get in good trouble, necessary trouble. So do something.
I love it.
Do something for someone else, whether it's get on, you know, Jason said it earlier. Stop voting for people that you are not going to hold accountable, okay? You need to vote for people and then hold them accountable. If they said something that made you vote for them and then they turn around and do the complete opposite, get on the phone and call them and say, what the heck? That's not what you said before you got that office. They are accountable to you, and it always amazes me when I'm in Sacramento how few of the American people hold the people who they vote for accountable, hold the people that are in these offices that say Department of something of the state of California. They work for you. Hold them accountable. I have a board that holds me accountable. If I did half of the things that the people that around us that we vote for do, they would fire me. And they would have that right. Stop going to sleep after every election. Stay woke, because stuff is happening, and it is on our watch. And our children and our grandchildren deserve better. We deserve better. My name is Michelle Pope. I am your host of Life is a Sacred Journey. I am not asking you to do anything that I'm not trying to do myself. Be the change. Be the change. One voice. Rosa Parks was one little, tiny old little woman. And we are talking about her, and she will go down in the history books till the end of time. And when they interviewed her, she said, I wasn't trying to make a change. I was tired. My feet hurt. And I was tired of having to go to the back of the bus. So are you tired yet? Get tired so that you can get woke and make a better world for all of us and for the generations to come. Be well this weekend. Take time for yourself. And don't forget to vote. And then let's get quiet. Let's get quiet and send some good vibes out into the world so that the change we need, will be what we see once the vote is done. I thank you for being and coming to Life is a Sacred Journey. It is my honor to be here with you. Thank you, all of you. Thank you to my sister. Thank you to Teresa. Thank you to the I have two Teresas, Sandy, all of you. I can't call you all by name, but know that I appreciate you and that I pray for you and that Life is a Sacred Journey is here for you and not for me. It's for us to get through this together. Jason, stay on the line. I'm going to just change things a little bit here, but thank you for coming to Life is a Sacred Journey and sharing your time, talent, and treasure with all of us, and we definitely will have you back. Oh, well, great people. See you next Friday. I don't know who the guest is. You'll figure it out, but come back. We'll see you next Friday, 8 o'clock. Be well. end everything. End.